What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. This is episode number 198. All right, so yes, it has been a little bit of a break. Sorry about that, but the reality is that it has been super busy. Summer is always crazy, and this year has been absolutely insane. Not a great excuse, but I will tell you that's the reason that it just hasn't happened a whole lot, and also why we're releasing this on a Saturday instead of a Friday. But hey, maybe you got some stuff going on this weekend, go for a little drive. Obviously, you can pop the old podcast in and take a listen. My guest today, though, is somebody who I recently actually just met. We're a part of one of the same kind of coaching groups, and just such a cool story. You know, when you do this podcast, you know, sometimes there's like these really big names that everybody knows about, and it's like, oh, you got to have them on their podcast. And yeah, it's always cool doing that. But sometimes there's people out there that maybe you haven't heard of that just have great stories, great messages, and just seem to be absolutely great people. And that's really, at the end of the day, like what I want to be able to showcase on this podcast is that people have maybe tough things that they've overcome, share with you how they've overcome them. And that's exactly what my guest today did. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. Also, make sure, get out there, go to crossbowmeats.com, getting ready to be restocked if you're listening this up to date. So we'll have a ton of great beef and pork, breakfast sausage, going to have some bacon, all that great stuff. So go to crossbowmeats.com, get you some meats. All right, everybody, let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name is Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Primal King Podcast. Super excited for my guest today. Our guest is someone who is an author of the book Manufactured Energy. He is a serial entrepreneur. He's gone through some stuff as well earlier on in childhood. We'll get into that, some of the trauma, PTSD, and kind of dealing with some of those days where you don't even really want to get out of bed. He's also getting ready to do something really cool called Mission 22. Definitely excited to jump into that. He's a family guy, husband, dad, all of that good stuff, which you all know we love around here. So super excited to welcome on today, Mr. Ron Lottie. Ron, again, thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, it's awesome to be here. I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, for sure. So when I was doing some of just kind of the pre-show research, I know you kind of had, it sounds like, and I wasn't able, I haven't been able to read your book, just full disclosure, so sorry about that. But, you know, I'd seen where you'd kind of gone through some stuff in childhood. And I'd just be curious, maybe starting there, because I know how easy it is for us as, you know, when we're kids to have that shape a lot of our worldviews, a lot of our beliefs, all of that stuff as we get older. So would you maybe just to start off with, give everybody an understanding of kind of what you talk about when you do talk about going through some of that stuff as a child?
Yeah. Happy to, for sure. You know, so very young age, I personally, I'll say that everybody's been through something, right? So I guess I'll just start there. And my whole book concept came from me wanting to share some of my childhood things I went through with my daughter someday. I've got a daughter now who's 18, going to be 19, which is insane. So I started writing it really just to leave something to her. And then it turned into me just letting out everything that I found I had shoved down for many, many, many years. Growing up, my sisters and I, we unfortunately, our mother struggled with drug and alcohol addiction. She was a beautiful woman, but we only got to see it 3 or 4 days a year, right? She woke up every morning feeling as though she was inadequate, and therefore she would have a bunch of shame, and she turned to doing some bad things. You know, all the way from completely abandoning us for months at a time to taking us for her drug runs, to sleeping out on the street and having me go find trash bags to keep us warm throughout the night, all the way through. And this isn't something a lot of people know, but all the way through to a few times making the decision to give up her body, for lack of better words, for drug money and have us in the room with her, which is some of the stuff that was hard to see. You know, I also had multiple stepfathers who for a lot of my childhood treated me like a punching bag. I think that happens to a lot of people. So I'm not certainly not complaining about it, but it's real. But one of the biggest ones, and I write about this in the book, is one of the drug pickups that didn't go well for my mom. Her boyfriend at the time found out about it and decided to beat her, tied to a chair, beat me up, leave me on the floor in the living room, and then light the house on fire when he left, and just kind of tell us we were all going to die. And thank goodness he's not good at tying knots. My mom was able to get out of the chair and get us out of the house before the whole thing went up in flames. But
how old were you at that time?
I might have been four or five years old at the time.
Yeah.
Very young. And it's amazing. I haven't shared this with anybody close to me recently, but that dream is just, it's been reappearing again lately. Just him, his name was Les, holding a match in front of his face saying, "We're all going to die." And it's crazy. I'm 42 years old now, Derek. So it's to know that that's still there is kind of crazy to think about. But that's just a bit of what I write about in the book.
Wow. So at 5 years old, because I always find it fascinating when you look into psychology and, you know, there's different takes of it, but a lot of people will say you kind of are who you are by the time you're seven. I've heard some people say 10 just because of those formative years. So as you have been looking back and maybe diving into that, like after you did the book and everything else, what were some of the things maybe that you uncovered about yourself all these years later that it's like, oh, maybe that's where it came from? I mean, was there anything that kind of popped up and was like, oh, you know, because and just to preface it a little bit more, I know for me, there's certain things that happened in my childhood that I look at now and it's like, that's why I'm that way. That's why I think that thought. And I really have to combat some of that stuff, I think, like a lot of us do. I mean, was there anything that you could look back and kind of you feel like maybe you uncovered and then it's like, that's why I feel this way. That's why I am that way.
Great question. And I'll probably get emotional answering it. Yes, for sure. A lot of things, actually. And I've done a lot. I mean, like most people go through things like this. I've been through counseling, psychologist. I've, you know, most recently I went to see someone who specializes in trauma. And my goodness, that was a life changer. I tell anybody who has an opportunity to do that, please do so. But yeah, when I was writing it and kind of going through a lot of this, I realized a lot for many years of my life. Now, I've been married for a long time and I'm very fortunate. My wife is amazing. I don't know how she puts up with me, but we've had our ups and downs. And a lot of that comes from what I went through as a kid. I always wanted to get my mom's attention, right? And it was rare. When she was on, she was amazing, you know, but she wasn't on very often. So I find intimacy to be very, very hard for me. I need affection. I'm like one of those guys that needs to be hugged all the time. I've got, you know, I'm bald, I got tattoos, I look tough, but I don't think I really am at times. But I struggle with intimacy because it's always felt awkward to me, but I always want it. I crave it. And that causes challenges on a relationship when you constantly need that attention, you constantly need that love. And there are days when it doesn't always come from your partner. So I find myself, over the years, I found myself getting close to other people that I probably shouldn't be close to, honestly. And it's weighed on relationships. It's hurt friendships. But that's, I've looked back and that's a big learning from it is that the feeling inadequate. Whenever I accomplish anything, I find myself waiting for the world to fall apart around me. And this is too good for me. This, I don't deserve this. So, okay, I've accomplished X, Y, and Z. When's the floor going to fall out from underneath me? Those are two of the major findings that I still battle with every day.
That's so good, because the second one I really, really identify and relate with. I remember the first year that I made like what most people would consider like good, like big money, right? You know, like well into the six figures. And I wanted to buy, and this is like such a dumb story, but it's so true, is I wanted to buy a side by side. I wanted to go buy a brand new razor, right? And so I did. I went and bought it. I'd wanted one forever. Finally could afford to. I go and buy one. And literally when I got done buying it, I had like this panic because I was like, something bad's going to happen. Like anytime I ever splurge on anything, right? It's like that psychological mindset of, it's almost like I can't have nice things because, you know, I'm broke, I'm poor, I grew up this way. Like you have those things. And I actually remember talking to somebody who I guess maybe she was kind of like a hokey pokey life coach-ish type of person. whatever. And she just kept asking me like, why, right? It wasn't like some crazy insightful thing, but it is, it's like, you start digging through it and you're like, oh, the reason why is because when I was very young, we were very poor and we didn't have nice things. And you know, when you wanted to have nice things, it's like, it wasn't ever like, cause my parents were great. Like my dad had drinking issues and stuff. My mom has always been a rock star, but it was like, we don't have stuff like that. So if you get stuff like that, then it's almost like you feel guilty. You feel like, okay, this is too good. Something bad has to happen because something good happened. And so it's so fascinating that you said that, because I know I've dealt with that as well. And I feel like I've been able to kind of work through that, but it always kind of tugs at you. Like, do you still notice yourself? Even like, you can do the affirmations, you can do the meditations, you can do all the stuff, but it's like, that stuff is still buried down deep.
Dude, I'm incredibly disciplined with my approach. You just mentioned affirmations, visualizations. Every morning I get up basically the same time. I do my meditation. I do my visualization. I have my giant thing of water. I take all my vitamins. I go outside. I do my exercise and all that stuff. I write about it. I journal. End of the day, I have my gratitude. I do all the things that everybody says solves those problems. Yet, I still struggle going to buy myself freaking underwear when I have holes in my underwear. So yeah, I struggle with it every single day.
Yeah. And then I wonder, like, you know, cause I've throughout my life, I've made a lot of money. I've made a little money, and it's like, it still seems like you can make all the money you want. And it's still kind of there. It's still kind of like a little bit of that scarcity mindset. I guess maybe at some point, if you just have kind of what they call FU money, to where you get over it. But I don't know, man, it is weird. So
I don't know what that dollar amount is, brother, because and this is that's another side of it. This is a conversation I have with my wife all the time too. I don't care what we have in our account. It's not enough. I don't want to spend it on anything because it's all going to be gone. I'm a financial advisor. I help people with what to do with their emergency fund and all the things. So I have all of the things for myself, yet I don't feel like I have a dollar to my name.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It is crazy. So at what point then, you know, because if I understand correctly, and correct me if I am wrong, but you ended up in the military, correct?
Correct.
So what was that journey? Was that, I just need to get the hell out of here? Like what brought you to that point?
Yeah, great question. And this will take us down another path that might be unexpected. And I think it's good for people to hear is, so when I was 15 years old, I was a sophomore in high school. It was one of the times, again, that unfortunately my mom left and didn't come back for a couple months. And then she came home one night. This is hard to even talk about. She broke into our house one night. She was completely naked. She was covered in bruises. She had cuts. She had missing teeth. She had everything. She had been beaten. She had been raped, and she was left in the field behind our house. I called the police because it was the only thing I knew how to do. And the officer showed up to, you know, the 20th time he had shown up to our trailer park that had no walls in it. And he looked and he said, "Hey, I don't know how many more times you need me to do this." And it sounds bad to say, but he pointed at my mom. He's like, "You need to make a decision. Is that going to be your life, or are you going to go live the life that I believe you can live and make something of yourself?" And that moment stuck with me to this day. He passed away fairly recently, but I'm so thankful for that man for saying that. But it was at that moment I said, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, many years of my childhood, when my mom would lose custody of us, we'd go back to the court and the judge would say, "Who do you want to live with?" And my mom would have told me ahead of time, "You know, Ron, if you choose to go live with your dad or anybody else, I'm going to kill myself tonight." So as a kid, I'm like, okay, I'm going to stay living with my mom. So I was done. I ended up going to stay at a friend's house that night and ended up getting in touch with my dad, who lived a couple hours away. And I said, "Dad, I'm sick of moving. I don't want to do this anymore. I've been in the same high school for a year, which is the longest I'd ever been in one school system. And I'd like to be able to stay here somehow. Is there some way I can do this?" And Derek, that family I'd stayed with that night, talked to my dad and they worked it out and they allowed me to stay with them for the rest of high school. So I was able to live. It's tough to talk about. They saved my life. I got to see a family have dinner. I got to see a family joke around together. And so I lived with them until I graduated high school. And then comes the military part. To your point, I didn't know. I felt like I had no purpose. I felt like there was no point of me living. So let me go put my hand up and go do something to try to figure this out. And I needed structure. So I joined the military, joined the Army National Guard. And this is where it takes a bit of a twist. I was in the Army National Guard, served. I was in Fort Benning, Georgia for a little while. Loved it there. I had food. I had structure. I had purpose. I knew I was told where to be at all times. I got plenty of attention, I'll tell you that. And then a couple of years went by, and you know, all the things started to happen. And we got my unit got activated. It was going to be going overseas. I had a breakdown. I had a bit of a call it a mental breakdown, call it whatever you want. Everything that I had gone through started creeping back in, and I lost it. And they deemed me unfit for war. So they actually did not send me overseas with the rest of my brothers in my unit. I stayed back. I trained soldiers. I did junk around the armory. But that was it. And then I was done in 2007. So from 99 to 2007, I served in the military. But to this day, I still feel like I didn't do my part, which haunts me. Right? I joined for purpose, joined for all the right things, and then never even did all the things. And now even to this day, I still feel shame for it, which is probably why when I do things, it's typically to try to raise money for veterans, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So what was it like when you got out of the military then? Obviously it sounds like from what you're saying that it felt like maybe some unfinished business or maybe some regret or guilt around it. How did that then kind of propel you to the next thing? Like what did it look like when you got out then and you kind of had to refine your purpose and, you know, you don't have somebody telling you where to be, what to do.
I floundered for many years. I had 20 different random dumb jobs. When I turned 20, 21, I partied for like 2 months straight and was throwing my life away. And then one day after kind of losing all my friends and building up a ton of debt and getting fired from multiple jobs, found myself at a movie theater and walked in with a bag full of two shirts and a pair of jeans and applied for a job. And then that's when I met my now wife. And they hired me, started working there for a little while. I was still a jerk. A few months went by and she wanted to become exclusive. And I said, no. And then she's like, then we're done. So then I floundered again for 3 or 4 months, had no idea what to do with myself. And then one night found myself 2 o'clock in the morning at a Denny's, completely drunk and in the corner, and them trying to kick me out and saying, this is not my life. I'm actually doing all of the things that I didn't like to see when I was a kid. And that's when I called her again. I said, I'm ready when you're ready. If you still are willing to give me a shot. She was. A few months later, I had nowhere to live. So I stayed with her and her family for a little while. A few months later, we found out she was pregnant. We went in. And this is tough because I want to cry again. I heard my daughter's heartbeat. And that was the moment that changed everything. When I heard her heartbeat, which I can still hear in my ears today, that's when it really hit me that, like, that night when my mom was passed out on the ground and I called the police, flashed before my eyes, and I'm like, that not going to be this. I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to do it to make sure this little child, we didn't know if boy or girl at the time, I'm going to make sure this little child has every opportunity that I wish I had. And that was it. I applied for jobs. I worked my butt off. And we can talk about that if you like, but the rest is kind of history. That was the fire that is still burning to this day.
Isn't it so crazy when, when you see that first ultrasound? I'm sure I've told this story before on the podcast, but I'll never forget. So my oldest is a girl as well. She's a daughter. She's 13 now, and I'll never forget I forget what they call him, the technician or whatever, you know, at the ultrasound place. She's sitting there and she's like doing the ultrasound, and then she like snaps a picture and she's like, do you see this right here? And she's got her little pen and she's like, this is the finger that you'll be wrapped around for the rest of this girl's life.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And it was like, if you want to talk about changing somebody, you know what I mean? Because it is. It's like, this is the daughter. This is, you know, you've got to be the man for her, right? Because I think a lot of us know that, you know, like they say, your daughters are going to probably grow up and try to find a man like you are. So be very, very careful how you raise these girls. Yeah. And so then it's like, it does. It's like, man, the light switch goes off and it's like, all right, how am I going to raise this girl to hopefully set her up for the best situation for the guy that she's going to be with at some point? So I can totally see how that could change you. So after you go through that, I mean, I have to ask, what was, you know, then girlfriend, now wife, what was her family like, kind of knowing that maybe you didn't have your stuff together and you were like, I mean, were they telling her like, get away from this guy? Were they supportive of you initially? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, I don't know why. Maybe they saw something in me, but they were very supportive right off the bat. Because you're right, man. You get this guy that I didn't have a vehicle. I'm sleeping on the floor in their basement. At that time, because as I mentioned, we broke up and then got back together. At that time, I didn't have a job again. So
speaking of daughters, right? It's like, I don't know if I'd be stoked if my daughter brought. No, I'm just kidding.
No, you're right. You're right. But it was, you know, when we became exclusive, that's what you want to call, I don't even know what the kids call it these days, but yeah. When we became that and I started to get serious is when I would have real, I used to sit and when my wife was working, she used to work real late. I would sit and play cribbage with my now mother-in-law for hours and just try to learn about her and hear about her life. And she would ask me about mine, and she got to know me, and I'm, as you're seeing, like, I'm very transparent, and it's just who I am. So I think that helped. But no, they were supportive, but I think there was some caution going. My father-in-law for sure was like, okay, what's this guy gonna be? He's a weirdo, you know.
So then you go from that, and obviously you're in the situation to where, you know, you're making this transition, obviously getting your life together. What does that look like? I mean, do you get into financial services at that point? Do you start your own business? Like, what kind of takes you to the next step?
Yeah, so it started with working with a friend of my wife's who is a landscaper and just saying, any jobs you have, I'm willing to go, and just going to then working at a parts department of an appliance store and doing the landscaping thing on weekends. And then from there, finding odd jobs. We lived up in the Northeast at the time, so I would go shovel whenever it snowed, doing all of the above. And then a friend, at this time, I'm only 22 years old, and a friend of mine says, hey, my father is looking to hire a janitor at the high school that I attended. So I actually then went to be a janitor at the school I had just graduated from 4 years before. Talk about humbling, right? I'm literally picking up trash in the lunchroom that I used to just go to school at with all the teachers I had, you know? So I did that for a little while. But then came the world of finance, where you're going to laugh at me here, but I literally was like, okay, I remember being a kid and seeing people in shirts and ties. They'd have briefcases. They looked important. You know, I'm pretty good with numbers. I want to make sure I never have any problems with money, maybe down the road. So I want to learn as much about this as I can. Why don't I just start applying to finance jobs? And I applied to be the president of sales for Citigroup, for HSBC Bank, to run the company.
Yeah.
And which is insane. So I that went nowhere. But then I got one phone call back from someone from HSBC Bank, and she literally said, Mr. Lottie, I feel as though you applied for the wrong job. It says here that you have military background and you're currently a janitor. I don't know why you would apply for the president of sales position, but I had to call you and find out why the heck you would apply for this. And my response was, and this is at the time, you know, we knew we had a little one. She had just been born. I'm like, I have a family to raise, and I'm going to do absolutely everything I can to make sure I take care of this family. I will outwork and out hustle any human being you have in that entire company. I promise you that. If you give me a shot, you're going to get that. And she's like, I admire it. No chance I can hire you for this job ever. But would you consider working at our beneficial office and working in the mortgage industry for one of our companies? And I'm like, yeah, 100%. And that's kind of where, you know, I went and interviewed, and that's where the world of finance kind of started, and I went down that path.
Nice. Well, hey, I mean, if you're going to go for a job, you might as well go for the top, right?
Yeah.
True. That's awesome. So as you kind of ascended through that, then when it comes to just writing the book, it's actually something that I've always kind of wanted to do. How did that process work for you? Did you just wake up and be like, you know what? I really do. I know you talked about wanting to have it in place for your daughter and everything, but is it something you always kind of wanted to do? Was it just like, oh, I'm just going to write it? Like, how did you become an author?
Great question. I think it's a combination of a very good counselor that I was seeing at the time that had made some suggestions of, why don't you get some of this stuff out? And honestly, I committed to doing 75 Hard, Andy Frisella's 75 Hard. And one of the things I added to my list, other than the key parts to 75 Hard, was I'll write for 30 minutes a day to try to get some of this stuff. I will give my word to my counselor and get the stuff out, but I'll do it through committing to 75 Hard. And that's what I did. I literally just started every morning. I just talked about my routine. I would do the routine, but writing for 30 minutes was part of it. And that's just sort of where it took off. And it turned into this couple hundred pages worth of stuff one day. You know, some days, I mean, if you've ever tried to start writing a book, you'll know, like, some days you'll sit down and stuff just comes out. Most days, though, it's like, I sat there for 30 minutes and got maybe a line or two, but at least I stuck to my commitment.
Yeah. So I'm curious too, with 75 Hard, I'm a big fan of it. Have done it a couple times now. Me and my wife did it earlier on this year at the very beginning of the year. What led you to 75 Hard? I'm just curious, like, what made you decide to go down that path? Cause I know a lot of people are like, oh, that's too crazy, it's extreme, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm a huge fan of it, obviously, but like, what compelled you to do it?
I've learned about myself over the years that I, as you're probably picking up, I'm all or nothing in everything I do. And, you know, I started seeing these, you know, Facebook stuff and people talking about it. I'm like, what the heck is this thing? And then I looked at it and I started asking around of my friends and nobody had done it. And as silly as that sounds, I'm like, okay, that makes me want to do it. Makes me want to do it, you know? And you're exactly right. I tried to get some people like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. You want to do it? And they're like, that's ridiculous. It's too much. I'm not going to do it, which made me want to do it even more. So that was it. I saw a couple ads about it. I asked a few friends about it. Nobody wanted to do it. And I'm like, I'm going to jump in.
What do you think it opened for you? And I ask you that because the very first time I did it was, I want to say, 3 years ago this fall. So what happened is, I can't remember who started. I think it was a friend of mine was like, yeah, I'm going to start. We'd kind of been talking about it and it was like, I'm going to start 75 Hard tomorrow. Would you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. I've been thinking about it. I've been talking about it. And then I'm like trying to do, you know, you know how our brains go. It's like, well, is this the right time of year to do it? Is it something I can actually stick to, you know, and all those things. Yeah. But it was almost like before my brain could catch up, I said yes. And then once I said yes, it was all over. And then my cousin also decided. So there's three of us that did it together. I mean, I guess maybe it's easier if you do it as a group. I don't know that it's ever going to be easy, especially if you just kind of roll off the couch and do, like, if you don't have very much discipline, which I think is something that I have honestly struggled with a lot of my life. I mean, that's a hard freaking thing to do. You know, like 75 Hard is really, really hard. But what I noticed after that was so many changes. And I know people like, oh, I did 75 Hard and I lost 30 pounds or whatever it is. That had nothing to do with it. Like, for me, it was all mental. It was all like just understanding like the repetition of anything. I don't know. Like it's such a key in almost any area of success is to be able to do things even when you don't want to do them. Like I've been a huge proponent of that on this podcast. Like being able to work out, even if you don't feel like it, or when the weather's bad, you know, being able to do things, even if you don't want to do them. And for me, that was a huge takeaway. So for you, like with maybe where you were at in your life, what changes or maybe lessons did you learn from going through something like that?
Yeah, a lot. You said a ton of them there. So I won't go too much into detail with all of that because you're on point, but I'll add a couple of things. To me, it was, it helped me. It kind of put a lot of things together, like a lot of puzzle pieces together. For me in life, I've always been a super, I don't even know. When I was a kid, even after talking about what I talked about a second ago, when I was a kid, I remember for some reason feeling like I'm meant for something big. It's weird. Like, it makes no sense, honestly, if you think about it. But like, I remember feeling that way. And then when I committed myself to 75 Hard and I started going through this, something clicked in my head one day where I was like, that's why I went through everything I went through. I am meant for something. And that's why I went through everything I went through. I don't care if it's even I stay where I'm at in life now, but I'm able to help 5, 6, 7 people who went through similar things I went through become what they want to become. Like, I didn't just, I never, I when I was a real like young kid, I could have gone on a very, very bad path very quickly. And I didn't. And it wasn't because I chose not to. I just didn't do it. Whether it's a higher power, we'll call it whatever you want. I feel like it was meant for something. So part of 75 Hard was me realizing that because I committed to doing something and I was just doing it. And it helped me see, like, when I can commit and I have some structure, man, it's amazing what happens to your life. And I started to see little wins and more wins. And I started seeing the impact it had on my wife, the impact it had on my daughter, her seeing her dad do these things. And then she started getting up and working out with me. And it was amazing. So that those are some of the big things. But I will also tell you this, that as hard as it was, and it was very hard, there were some times where it was really late at night. I'm like, crap, I didn't do this. Or the diet thing always got me because I like to eat, let's be honest. I would tell myself on some of the harder days when I went got up to go do something that was hard, I'd say it would make me remember, man, you've been through worse. You've been like, what, these are not that big a thing. You've been through worse. And then the other thing it did, Derek, was my dad and I had, we did have a good relationship. I didn't spend a lot of years with him because of the court system being the way the court system was favoring the mother at the time. But it made me remember things he used to say to me. And one of them was, the most important thing you have in your life, there's two, is a good handshake and your word. And never break your word, especially to yourself. And Andy's talked about that. And that has completely changed me to a point where if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. I always do it. And that was evident in 75 Hard for sure.
Yeah, no, I love it. What's weird is that I've also found when you go through 75 Hard, I think it makes you realize that you, maybe if you do struggle, for anybody out there, and here we are like promoting Andy Frisella's group or whatever, right? Like, he needs help promoting stuff. But you know, what it did for me is I went through that, and then I'd always kind of wanted to try like a full carnivore diet, just full meat. Right. Yep. And I never had the discipline to do it. I thought that'd be cool. And I'd had Sean Baker, who's one of the big carnivore guys, on my podcast and talked to him. And, cool. And then after I did 75 Hard, it's like, you know what? I can do that. And then I did, like, I did it. I went completely strict for like 6 months, dropped like 40 pounds. Was lighter than I'd been since, like, it was like my freaking, you know, athlete playing days, right? And yeah. And it was just weird though, because it was like a build, and it's like, oh, if I can do that, then I can do this, and if I can do this, then I can do that. Because what you start realizing, and this is where I know for me, and like we did a Primal Reset, which was similar but some different things. A whole bunch of us did last summer. But I think what it makes you start understanding is it's like, choose your hard, right? Yeah. Like choose your hard. Is drinking a gallon of water every single day might be hard, but so is like being dehydrated and tired, you know, sticking to a diet might be hard, but so is being fat and not being able to move your body. Right. Like there's like the choose your hard. And then when you start realizing, like, okay, it is hard to do these things, but it's even harder. Like if you do the inverse of these things. Yeah. And that was where my brain started going. So it was super fascinating to go through that. And I seriously would encourage anybody to try it. Again, like neither one of us get any money for promoting 75 Hard. I mean, Andy doesn't even charge any money for it. So, you know, there's nothing in it for us other than to hopefully help you all out. So I do want to switch gears a little bit. So when it comes to, you know, everything that you went through, now having, you know, a family of your own and having gone through, you know, whether it is 75 Hard or some of these different things, you know, being in a position now to where you have a book, you have, you know, you're an author. If you could go back to that 15-year-old version of yourself that found your mom that way that night, like what would you, now that you know better, if you will, like what would you tell that 15-year-old kid that's just like, I have no purpose. I have no, like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Like, what would you tell yourself?
Man, that's a good one. I've relived that moment many times, but I've never relived it that way. So it got that kind of hit me a bit. So I apologize for the pause, but, you know, I'd probably start by looking at him and just telling him like, hey, none of this is your fault. None of this is your fault.
Did you feel like it was when you were that age? Yeah. Did you feel like you caused it maybe, or?
For sure. I did for many years. I felt like, man, I must be so, it must be such a burden to have a kid that you would turn to do these things and just to try to, you know, like leave life. And you'd rather be, you'd rather drink a 30 pack every day than help your kid. And for many years, I was like, man, I'm a terrible human being. I'm causing my mom to make these choices. And it took a long time to get past that. But yeah, so I'd start with that because I learned it way later in life. But I'd also say, take notes, because you're going to be damn proud of yourself. Whew. You're going to be damn proud of yourself when you get to see what you're going to become. And it's going to be awesome. But take notes, because you want to make sure you celebrate all of it along the way and take none of it for granted and use all of this to help somebody else, because that's the biggest gift. But I'd say be proud. And man, I can't wait for you to see your future you.
That's awesome. I love it.
That killed me, dude. That was a good question.
Yeah, no, that's the good stuff though, because the reality is, Ron, is that there could be somebody listening to this that's in that spot, right? Or that maybe just got through some of this stuff and is like, what am I going to do? I don't have purpose. I don't have a family. You know, I see all these other people out there, these happy families on social media and all the family portraits and, you know, and that's probably even different and harder now for kids, I would imagine, than what we were, because we saw the people around us when we were kids. We didn't have social media, and I could only imagine what it must be like, you know, like even with my daughter and she's in a super small school, but you know, there's always the kids that don't have the great family life. And that's one of the things that we're always trying to teach is like, you know, stick for what you believe in, all of that, but also have grace, because you never know what other kids are going through. Yeah. And now it's like magnified because of that. And if you can be that light, if you can be that friend, like you never know what's going to happen, because like 15-year-old Ron probably could have used a good friend or a good influence, you know? And unfortunately, if you're just sitting there consuming social media all day, it's just going to make it worse.
Yeah, I agree. You just made me think of something else that I want to make sure I add to that is, I would also tell 15-year-old Ron that it sucks that you've gone through all these things, but had you not, you wouldn't be where you're going to be when you're 42. I can tell you that right now. I have, I feel like I connect with people and have more empathy than most human beings do. I can put myself in other shoes pretty quickly and understand. I care. We draw positive people to ourselves because of it, because I have more grace and I'm grateful for life every moment that I'm alive. And I appreciate, oh boy, do I appreciate every second that I get, every moment that I get. I tell people I talk to every day, just like I am with you right now. I'm with you right now. You're what matters most to me right now. I can be in that moment. And I wouldn't be able to do any of that stuff, little Ron, if you didn't go through all the things that you're going through in life right now. So I'm super grateful for all of it, as strange as that is to say, because of it. It makes me who I am, and I wouldn't be successful or appreciate my life as much had I not gone through it.
Oh, for sure. So how did it turn out, just out of curiosity, with your mom? Like, did she ever get cleaned up? Like,
no, she, years later, after my daughter was born, I tried to get her back into my life. This is another story that not a lot of people know. But tried to get her back in my life. She was sick at the time. And when I got recalled down to the military, she actually, she tried to make accusations and take my daughter from us. She called the police and tried to say that she saw us abusing her. She wanted to get custody of my daughter. So at that moment, I had to cut her out, obviously, because she was on something or whatever. And then a few years after that, she died. I'm told she died in her sleep. So I had no relationship with her after that.
Wow. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. You know, you always hope that at some point they, you know, figure it out or whatever, but that is the unfortunate thing, is that that story doesn't always happen that way.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, I know, at least from what my sister tells me, who, by the way, my sister is also an absolutely amazing human being that is doing great things in life. So it's just awesome to see him and have her in my life now, too. And she's a phenomenal aunt to my daughter, and it's just great. But from what she tells me, because she reconnected with my mom, and they were close towards the end. You know, she told me that mom was still struggling with some things, but she had faced a lot of those demons and was more accepting of mistakes that she had made in life and was at peace. Not to say that she made the right choices, but she was at peace. So it might not have been the ending I wanted, but better than it could have been.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I guess as we kind of getting up to it now, man, this has flown by crazy. I want to jump into your Mission 22 because I know a little bit about it, seen what you've been posting on social here and there. But if you wouldn't mind kind of telling people what this is going to be all about, because it sounds pretty terrible. But yeah, I'd love for you to tell people what you got going on there.
Yeah, happy to. Just quick background on the why behind it, I guess, because it'll talk more about what I'm doing here. But a few of the things that have helped me with depression, with the PTSD and others is I find that when I spend some time doing long, grueling workouts that most people wouldn't want to do and kind of relive some of the crap I went through as a kid, I come out of it feeling very, very good. And I've noticed over the years that we all have ebbs and flows in life, especially those of us who struggle, call it depression, call it whatever you want. I think we all have our ups and downs. My downs, I call it the storm. You'll see it in the book. The storm for me has gotten much shorter and less frequent because of doing things like this. So a couple of years ago, I did a 24-hour workout. You know, Goggins has a few of these things, right, where he talks about it all the time. But I was doing these as well. But, you know, do something for every 2 hours for 24 hours. I've done that twice. But I ended up building this workout. I'm going to work out for 44 hours. This all starts on July 28th. So 14 days from today. Oh my God, it's only 2 weeks away. I'm going to work out for 44 hours with the hopes of raising $22,000 for Mission 22. And Mission 22 is a nonprofit that works directly with veterans and their families to try to help them fight and overcome veteran suicide. So what it essentially is, Derek, is on July 28th at 8 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to start this workout and it's going to last 44 hours long. I'm going to have a bunch of things that I'm going to try to complete during this time. All of it to me is symbolic of going through depression. So going through the darkness into the light, through the darkness into the light over 2 days. I'm going to run a half marathon. And those of you who know me, I'm 220 pounds. I'm not some little endurance runner. I am terrible at running. It's going to be terrible. But I'm going to start with a half marathon run. I wrote a whole agenda out. People can feel free to look at it, but it's going to go from a half marathon run. I'm going to do a marathon row. I'll do a marathon on the Echo bike. I'm going to carry a barbell on my shoulders around my neighborhood for a mile, which they all love when I do that. That, though, is meant to be symbolic of carrying the weight of the world in your shoulders and just trying to find a way to move forward. I'm going to do a weighted vest march for 4 hours. What am I missing? I'm going to do Murph twice. I'm going to flip a tire for a mile around my neighborhood as well. All of these things, by the way, are meant to be extremely hard, which is going to be very hard. Hopefully I survive it. But the idea is to just find a way to keep moving forward. I'm not the strongest guy. My run pace is terrible. It takes me forever to do Murph and flip tires and all that. I'm not the strongest guy. I'm not the fastest guy. None of these things.
So real quick, before you go on.
Yeah. Yeah.
For those who don't know, I know Murph too well and it sucks. It's terrible. Memorial Day workout. If you're a CrossFitter, what is Murph for those who don't know? Cause just that in and of itself is awful. Not let alone doing it twice in 44 hours with no sleep. So
so you start with a 1 mile run, then you do 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, and you finish with another 1 mile run.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brutal. And for those of you who are like, oh, that doesn't sound that bad, it is that bad. It really is, especially if you do it with a weighted vest, especially if you do it like fast pace, or in your case, if you do it when you've already, you know, you're doing all these other things in addition to it. That sounds brutal, man. I'm not going to lie.
No, you're right. You're 100% right. And I'm going to do it twice during 44 hours with no sleep whatsoever. So I don't know how that's going to go, but I'm going to do it the best I can to just try to keep moving forward.
So do you have like a camera crew? Is it documented? Is it live stream? Like, how are you getting this out there?
Man, you know, I'm terrible with all of that. So anybody who now searches Ron Lotti on Instagram or Facebook is going to be like, this guy doesn't post he posts a little bit, but like there's nothing. I'm so bad with it. I don't have a camera crew coming right now. You know, my thought is if people want to show up and do any of it with me, maybe they can take video or take pictures. I got to think of something to document it. And here's why. It's not because it's me doing it at all. It's because I just want people to see that I'm a normal dude. And we can all do these things in life and find a way to do these things. And maybe it'll inspire one person to go do something like this. And the other side of it too, Derek, is I'm hoping I survive it. I know I will. I keep jokingly saying that, but my hope is to make this an annual thing that we can continue to, you know, get people all across the country that are going to do this with me. And we raise awareness for Mission 22. We get rid of the stigma of dealing with depression and not willing to talk about it. And maybe we just find ways of helping each other move forward, passing the test. I keep calling it pass the test, right? That's what it is.
Yeah. You got to, I mean, find a camera crew. You have to, even if it's one guy. Like we actually, this year, we brought a camera guy from a local, pretty big company that does this for a living. And it's not honestly that expensive. He hung out with us. He's going to document it. We're going to have new videos out for our meat business side of stuff. And I'm super excited to see it, but I would love if you had like somebody there or a couple guys. I mean, they probably don't want to stay at 44 hours straight with you, but if you could get a couple guys there to document it, cause then, you know, you can create something that maybe could go viral and could impact more people. So I'm all for our team, like hire a camera crew.
I appreciate it. I promise I'll look into it. I promise.
Nice. So as we get kind of toward the end here, you know, what do you see the vision forward being? I mean, you've overcome so much, again, with everything that you've been able to go, that you've gone through to where you are now. Like, you're still a young guy, and obviously you just have exceeded probably what most people would have expected of that 15-year-old kid. I mean, what is next for you? Like, what do you see the next 20, 30, 40, however many years left?
Well, I appreciate the question, and I think that's constantly changing. But what I can tell you is, you know, I'm in the process of writing my second book, and it talks about a lot of this stuff. And it's interesting that you just talked about maybe being in a better spot than someone who was put in the same situation would be, because that's exactly what my book is about. I think we all have an opportunity to make the most of our situation. So that's coming sometime soon. I'd love to get out there and travel the world and meet with people and help them see the inner beauty that they have and become their best selves. You know, we're all beautifully broken, so let's pick up the pieces together. But honestly, one of the major things that I, two things. One is more of just like a childhood thing that I want to make happen is I want to be a part owner of a professional sports team someday. And I promise you that's going to be on
Which
the docket.
Team? Which team?
I want to start my own. I'd love to be part of a team, be part of a group that starts a new franchise in any, you know, some location where it's warm, because I hate the cold.
What sport then? Okay, what sport?
Ideally football. Ideally
okay.
Football.
There we go.
So it could be the NFL, it could be arena, whatever. But the other massive project that I'd like to be able to do that has been on my mind for a long time is I want to build a massive, call it an after school program, we'll call it what you want, but a giant building in a highly populated city that is designed to give a safe place for kids to go to right after school, where we have paid teachers in all aspects of life, whether it be finances, whether it be business, sports, it could be fitness, it could be, you know, music, it could be arts, all of the things that are losing popularity and not being taught much anymore, but give them a place where they can go. And again, the teachers will be paid, because we want to make sure we have great education, but I want to build a massive facility that focuses on that. So the kids that are going through all of it right now, who went through some of the, or are going through the things I went through, have a safe place to be. And then they can be the future leaders making an impact later on in life.
I love that. I love that. Cause that's something that, I don't know, you worry, at least I worry about what kids are learning, because I've said it over and over and over again, and not like to get overly political, but it is one of the things to where it seems like we're raising kids and teaching them just the wrong things. You know, it's so much, it seems like victim mindset and you're perfect just the way you are type of stuff. And I know that we look at our kids and we want to believe they're perfect, but they're not. They need to be taught. They need to be educated. And so much of what it seems to me they need to be educated about just doesn't really seem to fit in curriculum. So I think it would be such a noble goal to, you know, teach entrepreneurship, champion business owners, you know, champion trying to get out there and be the best version of yourself. And if you do that, then obviously, you know, what you reward is going to be emulated. And so I would much rather see people, you know, being taught how to, you know, how finances work. I was clueless when I graduated high school, I had no concept of finances whatsoever. And then you get out there and you get a $300 credit card, you know, you're 18 and you get that thing in the mail. It's like, oh, free money. Yes. And then, you know, I'm in collections and I mean, thank God my credit score finally recovered like maybe 10 years ago, but the 20s were brutal. I wasn't getting anything. yeah. But just learning some of that stuff would have been so critical for someone like me, I know.
Yeah. 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 And the other side of it too, is like you alluded to it, right? Which is mindset and drive and, you know, I think there's a lot of value in knowing that you're not perfect and yeah. that you need to work hard and earn everything you have. And then, so yeah, all of that is my dream, my big, big dream.
I love it. I love it. So just to kind of wrap up here, before we get into the final question, where can people find you, whether or not this ends up getting streamed online, you know, with the Mission 22. And I know you put out some reels and some stuff like that, but where can people find you? Where are you the most active? I know you said you're not super active on social and maybe we'll change that for you soon, but right. But where can people find you, follow along with you, check you out, look at the book, all that type of stuff.
Yeah. So the book is Manufactured Energy. It's on Amazon. Anybody can go on and get it there. I'm in the process of building a website for all of that and a few other things, especially with the new book coming out. So I'll have a better answer for you on that later on down the road. But as far as where else people can find me, I'm on Facebook mostly, and that's just at Ron Lotti, RonLotti. And then the same thing, Instagram, at Ron Lotti. I'm on LinkedIn as well, Ron Lotti. But that's it. Only three spots right now. I'm trying to get better with that. You can help me with that, Derek.
Perfect. Well, I'm just basically Facebook and Instagram. I can't get into the TikTok thing. I just, you know, no one wants to see, you know, 40-year-old bald dude dancing in TikTok. So
I've just, same thing.
I've stayed away from that. Nice. So just to kind of to finish out here, you know, with the Primal King podcast, it's really built around three different pillars. It's all around liberation, which is mindset, hopefully changing the way that we think, you know, lifestyle, the way that we live. And then lastly is the legacy side of this and really kind of what we want to leave behind when we are gone. I know some people look at legacy as maybe being egotistical and, oh, you know, what building can be named after me. It's not about that. It's more about obviously kind of what maybe you want to be remembered for at some point. And so when it comes to you and all the stuff that you've gone through and, you know, everything that you have been going through that you will continue to go through and, you know, Mission 22 and some of the stuff that you're trying to raise awareness for, I guess when you get to the end of all of it, Ron, and, you know, maybe you're laying on your deathbed there with hopefully a big smile on your face saying job well done. What do you want your legacy to be?
Great question. And I think about it every day. To me, I want to be remembered. Like I want billions of people across the world to know my name and when they think of my name, they think of themselves working hard to become a better version of themselves. That's what I want. I want people to be like, Ron Lotti, he's that guy that did something. I forget what it was. I remember him coming from nothing, becoming something and helping a lot of people see the best in themselves. I want to be like that. I want to work hard to become the best I can be so that I can impact more people. That's it.
Awesome. Awesome. Raising all the boats, right?
That's it. Together we go, right?
Yeah. I love it. Well, guys, make sure you get out there. Check out the book. Again, the book is called Manufactured Energy. You can follow Ron on social, Ron Lotti, LOTTI. Again, LOTTI is how you spell the last name. So get out there, check him out. Hopefully between now and a couple of weeks from now, we have convinced Ron to get a camera crew and document this. If for, because I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you, Ron, I'm not joining you. I'm not making that commitment, but I would love to see the process of you going through that, because I do apparently watch people and like to watch people in pain, but I think the cause is super worthy. What you're doing is a very noble thing. I know that your heart's in the right spot. The cause is great. So again, guys, go out there, support Ron, buy his book, check it out and make sure you follow him. Again, Ron, this has been awesome, man. The time flew by and I appreciate you.
Same to you, man. I can't believe how fast it went. Thanks so much for having me.
We'll talk again soon.
I absolutely love having you as a listener of the Primal King podcast. If you don't want to miss out on the great content then it's time to hit that subscribe button right now. Do not be left behind. And then share your thoughts and feedback with a written review of the show. I read every single one of these, and it helps me make sure I am serving you best. It also allows others to find this content, and it builds this community. Make it an awesome day, and we'll see you next time.